Good evening and welcome to Monday Night Playhouse on CBC Radio 2. I'm James Roy. Tonight we present the final episode in the comic series The Seven Deadly Sins. Written by playwright Greg Nelson, it's the story of a young minister and his quest to build a congregation in a small town Alberta church. Things are pretty desperate at Dudley Church. Reverend Kevin has to get 40 people in the congregation on Sunday or he'll be reassigned. So far, his record is 4, plus a dog. Kevin really doesn't want to be reassigned. Michelle, the love of his life, believes she has roots here, and she definitely isn't leaving until she solves the big mystery of her grandmother's birth. Here now is Wrath, the final episode of The Seven Deadly Sins by Greg Nelson.
I've finally gotten the message. It's taken me 2 months, but now I finally understand the truth. I've had an epiphany. This is how it happens. I'm sitting up in bed. Michelle is next to me, fast asleep. It's early, about 7 a.m., and it's a beautiful morning. The window is open, and there's a soft breeze coming in, and, you know, the birds are singing. I've been up all night, reading the sermons of Archibald Dudley, founding father, local legend. Michelle and I found them in the church office, this big stack of sermons, and basically, they're stunning. Page after page of integrity and compassion and a deep, deep understanding of God and, you know, sin and human frailty, goodness, pain, hope, all that stuff. I can't put them down. I'm riveted. And that's when it hits me. The realization. Oh, my God. Of course.
What time is it?
Guess what? I've had an epiphany.
A what?
I have to leave Dudley. I have to move on. It's true. The purpose of me coming here has been, you know, served.
What purpose?
Well, first of all, to meet you and fall in love. And second of all, to read these sermons.
What?
Because, I mean, I read these and I realize that next to him, to Dudley, my faith is like minuscule. You know, it's laughable. It's like he's a Rembrandt and I'm, you know, a drawing. I'm a cartoon. No, a thought bubble. No, a caption. I'm a caption.
Have you been up
all
night?
But I didn't realize it right until I read these sermons. I thought I was a Rembrandt. And that's why nobody's coming to church. Of course, because they sense it. They sense I'm a caption, so they stay in bed.
Kevin, you're raving.
It makes perfect sense. Oh. This is great. This is great. You know what? I'm going to have a tub. Michelle follows me into the bathroom.
Okay. Start at the beginning.
Why do you think they're shutting the church down? It's a sign.
You still have a week.
I know.
As long as you get 40 people by Sunday, they'll keep it open.
Yeah, but that's just it. 40 people? That's insane. It's impossible. It'll never happen. And even if by some miracle it does, the point is I have nothing to say. I'll stand up there before those 40 people and first word comes out of my mouth, they're going to know. I'm a caption.
Could you stop saying that? You're not a caption.
I'm a total caption.
Well, I think you're a Rembrandt.
Yeah, well, you're biased. Are you coming in?
Uh-huh.
Look, this is not a bad thing. Actually, it's a relief. Now I can just leave with you together and maybe, just maybe, one day, if I work really hard and study and learn, then I'll be a Rembrandt, too.
Just like Dudley.
Just like Dudley.
Hmm.
I mean, those sermons, you got to read them. He was this incredible man.
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure. I mean, I've been doing the research, and frankly, I have a bad feeling about old Archie.
Well, you
have no listen. I mean, we know that he bought out all the land in the district, and I'm sure that there was something strange going on in this house. I mean, there's writing on the walls, Kevin. What is that about? Lists of food.
Maybe they ran out of paper.
Oh. Tell me again what Annie said.
She has a story to tell us.
I bet she knows everything. I mean, she lived here. I bet she had a bath right here. Right in this tub.
You think so?
Oh, I have so many questions. I can't wait to meet her.
Annie Dudley lives up the valley. claims to be the daughter of Archibald. She's at least 90 and more than a little eccentric. The first time we met her, she started shooting at us with her shotgun. Frankly, I would have written her off as a crank, except she had this key to this old steamer trunk we discovered down in the cellar. Turned out to be full of antique phonograph cylinders, these old recordings of something, we don't know what, because we have nothing to play them on, and the kicker is, she does. And I get the feeling that she wants to hear them as much as we do. So, Michelle and I haul the trunk out to the car and drive back up the valley.
So I don't get it. If Annie is the daughter of Dudley, that means you're out of luck, right?
So?
So isn't that the point? Isn't that why you came down here? Because you thought you might just be the big heiress?
That's not...
You know, to the Dudley estate.
I told you. All I know is there's some connection to my grandmother. It's this giant family mystery. Incredibly hush-hush. I want to find out what happened.
And you think that Annie's going to tell you?
That's exactly what I think.
Yeah, well, I'm disappointed. I mean, I thought you were going to be rich. Why do you think I took up with you?
Took up?
For the money.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you.
When we get to Annie's, we haul the steamer trunk up to her front door.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I suppose you want some coffee.
Sorry?
I never drink the stuff. Rot your gut. You can just set that down over there.
Okay.
Now I'll get your damn coffee.
No, that's okay, really.
I made it. You might as well drink it.
The house is cluttered. Every surface piled up high with books, papers, strange-looking objects.
I hope you don't want milk.
No, that's fine.
That's fine.
Turns my stomach. Here you go.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, you're Michelle.
It's a pleasure to
meet you. I have to tell you, I'm a little spooked by you.
Sorry?
Your boyfriend here doesn't bother me, but you give me the creeps. Now, don't take it personally. You remind me of someone I used to know. I'd say you were the spitting image.
I've
been keeping my eye on you, both of you. Nothing happens in Dudley that I don't know about. You're looking into your family history,
yes,
and you've opened up the church.
Mm-hmm.
I was planning to stay right out of the whole business, but when I saw this young lady, it was like a punch in the stomach. Looks like the time has finally come.
The time?
What time?
I don't understand.
Well, if you just pipe down for a second, I'll tell you.
Sorry.
Are you comfortable?
Yes.
All right, then. Here goes nothing. When I was a girl, I used to play the bagpipes. Every Sunday, I'd play them. You see, in most towns on Sunday morning, the church bells ring. But in Dudley, in order to summon the congregation to church, it was the minister's daughter, me, playing the pipes. And every Sunday, the faithful would come. They packed the church full, right to the rafters. All of them there to hear my father preach. He was the model pastor, wise, strong, compassionate. He had the respect and admiration of the town, at first.
The wages of sin are damnation. The wages of sin are the torments of the everlasting burning flames of hell. You must look inside yourselves, my friends, right now.
My father was an angry man. In fact, when he became especially cross, he used to have little puffs of steam coming out of his ears. Oh, you could actually see them and hear them. He was what you might call an authoritarian, both in the pulpit and at home.
Dear Lord, bless this food to our use and ourselves to thy service. Amen.
Amen.
Annie, get your elbows off the table. We're no savages here that we go around putting our elbows all over the table. What do you think God would say about those elbows? He'd be horrified, that's what. Absolutely horrified.
And I'd sit there, mesmerized, watching the steam come out of his ears, his face growing redder and redder.
What are you looking at, girl? Eat your dinner!
I think it was hardest on my mother. Over the years, she grew quieter and quieter, until eventually, she disappeared. Stayed in her room and refused to get out of bed. I used to bring her up trays of food from the kitchen.
Oh, Annie. That looks lovely. Just set it down on the bed, dear. Don't you worry about your father, dear. He means well, really he does. Oh, now this looks delicious. Oh, here.
Food was her only consolation in what had become an unbearable life.
Oh.
All she did was eat. Eat and sing. All day long. My father began to envy the other men of the town, the men with normal wives. And before long, his envy turned into greed.
You want to see me, Reverend?
I'll come straight to the point. It's about your sins.
My sins?
Don't you play games with me, young man. I know all about the drinking and the gambling and the loose women.
Well, you gotta forgive me, Reverend. But the devil made me do it. I'm cursed. I'm a good-for-nothing sinner.
There you are. Now, there. Don't you worry. All you have to do is sign your ranch over to me.
My what?
You had me your ranch. Your beautiful ranch. Just transfer into my name. There's a good fella. Bring me the title, and then I'll forgive you. And so will God. Otherwise, I'll be forced to mention your trespasses on a Sunday. From the pulpit. In front of the entire town.
Eventually, he owned every ranch in the district. And the love and admiration of the town turned into resentment and fear. Nobody dared to miss church. And as he stood in the pulpit on Sunday morning, the whole time, inside his head, he was tallying up his wealth and planning the next move, deciding whom of the faithful he could extort from next. Oh, it was a terrible situation. Appalling. Well, you could just feel the tension. A kind of awful anxiety settled over the town. That was bound to blow up in my father's face. And before too long, it did. You see, by this time, Father had taken to the bottle. He discovered the many varied pleasures of single malt whiskey. And he'd spend his evenings at his desk, pouring glass after glass of whiskey, listening to his phonograph player. Oh, he loved that phonograph. He was always sending away for new recordings. He played them over and over, late into the wee hours. And then he'd go to bed. Alone. And it was about this time that he decided he needed a maid. And so, into our home, he brought a woman. A girl from the next town to look after me and mother. To cook and clean. And of course, in no time at all, things went from bad to worse. I've often wondered why she did it. Perhaps she was frightened of Father, just like everyone else. But I like to think that, quite simply, she found him attractive. He was a handsome man and full of charisma. I like to think that she fell in love with him, despite his faults. Or, maybe, because of them. I'll never know for sure. But I'll always remember that morning, that Sunday morning at breakfast. It was obvious as soon as I sat down that something was terribly, terribly wrong.
Oh, stop that, girlie, will you? Right now. Oh, stop that. Annie, eat your breakfast. You can't be staying here. You'll have to go away. And you're never to come back. Never come back here, do you understand? I never want to see you again.
But who is going to provide?
God will. God in his infinite mercy. Oh, you're a wicked girl.
a trumpet, and God will show you...
I don't need God! I need money, and you better give me some!
Don't you raise your voice to me, girl! Get out of this house right now! Go on, out! Out, 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 out! What are you looking at, Annie? Eat your breakfast.
She packed her bags and disappeared, and for a long time we didn't see hide nor hair of her. Until the day, 7 or 8 months later, when she appeared on Main Street, clutching a newborn baby, holding it up, shaking it at the crowd, and screaming.
Look at this baby! This baby is the love child of Archibald Dudley. Look what your good reverend did! Your good and virtuous reverend!
When Father appeared, the townsfolk parted before him like the Red Sea. Even the baby stopped crying. He just stood there for a long, terrible moment. And then, lunging suddenly forward, he grabbed the hand of the maid and hauled her and the baby away.
Let go of me! No! Oh! I'm being kidnapped! I'm being kidnapped!
He took her back to the house, and there she stayed. The maid and the baby, and mother and father and I, all of us under one horrified roof. That Sunday, when Father took up his usual station outside the church and instructed me to start playing. That Sunday, no one appeared. Not one single person came to church that day. Not one. Father stood there, and I played the pipes to the empty streets. He wouldn't let me stop. He forced me to stand there, playing hour after hour, all morning, all afternoon, and the longer we stood there, the madder he got. In fact, it was more than anger, more than puffs of steam. It was something deep inside, a building up of terrible pressure, explosive, like a volcano, until at last he walked away. And finally, I stopped playing and followed him home, running along behind him with my bagpipes, trying to keep up. And when he came through the door of the manse, he didn't hesitate.
Holly! Gadley! Where are you? Come here right now! Hurry up!
He rounded us up, wife, daughter, mistress, and love child, packed us into the car and started driving. Up into the hills we drove, faster and faster. Father was a man possessed. He was on fire, a fierce kind of joy in his voice and his eyes. And then without warning, he left the road and headed straight for one of the coulees. A deep coulee with a steep drop, almost a cliff.
Archie, what are you doing? Oh, slow down. You're driving too fast.
But he doesn't. He just keeps singing and driving. And the edge of the coulee is coming closer. And finally, Mother grabs the baby and thrusts it into my arms. And then she opens the door and shoves me out, me and the baby. And as we hit the ground, the car goes over the edge. And I swear that just for a moment, it hangs there in mid-air. And Father's voice goes wafting out over the valley, strong and clear.
Enjoy the joy of heaven.
Enjoy the joy of heaven. There was a big explosion, a fireball, and they all died. And we lived, the baby and I. And that is the end of the story. Their name, an everlasting name. Their joy, the joy of him.
Wow.
Gee.
I have a question. The maid. Is she the one I look like?
The spitting image.
So my grandmother must have been...
The baby.
I don't get it. How could the same man who wrote those sermons I read, those incredible sermons full of faith and goodness, how could he be capable of...
Because...
Actually, you know what? It's encouraging, because it means he was only human, right? Sure, he had his faults. Big ones, okay, but he also wrote those sermons, so he wasn't all bad.
Actually, he didn't write them.
He didn't?
He typed them.
What do you mean?
Open up that trunk, would you? Now, hand me one of those cylinders. Anyone will do. They're all the same.
The phonograph player is on the table. I give one to Annie. She turns the crank and slides it on.
Speak not of the sins of others. Speak only of your own transgressions.
That's one of his sermons. Is that his voice?
That is the Reverend Walter Dunlop of Boston, Massachusetts.
I don't understand.
My father had a subscription. Every week, he received a cylinder in the mail. Oh, it was a common thing in those days. You could order songs or speeches or sermons. And every week, he'd type it out. And come Sunday, he'd preach it like it was his own.
You're kidding.
I guess he wasn't a Rembrandt after all.
The truth is, he was all bad as they get. And the truth is, I'm not much better.
What do you mean?
I inherited the anger. I've lived my whole life mad. 80 years. Mad at my father for driving into a coulee. Mad at the town for staying away that Sunday. Bunch of hypocrites.
So that's why nobody comes to church.
Unbelievable.
For almost 80 years, a cloud has been hanging over Dudley. A terrible silence. Now, I think it's finally time for the sun to come out.
What do you mean?
What I mean is, I'm coming to church. On Sunday.
And she does. She stands outside the church and plays the pipes. And I stand right beside her. And beside me is Michelle and Harold and Verna.
Kevin, it's working. Reverend, look.
I don't believe it.
Look at all the people.
Sure enough, one by one, the doors of the houses open, and the people poke their heads outside. These looks of amazement on their faces as they come down their driveways and onto the street, and then down the street and into the church.
Who are these people?
I don't know. I've never seen them before.
Most of them don't come out much.
They do look a little pale.
Harry, look. There's Maxine Johnson. Yoo-hoo! Hi, Maxie!
And there's Patsy Borden! Atta girl, Patsy!
Most of them are old. Some of them can hardly walk, but all of them are smiling to beat the band.
Yee-haw! Woo!
And when I finally reach the pulpit, there's not a single empty seat. Well... Good morning. I must say this feels like I'm dreaming. I can't tell you how good it is to see you. I don't know where you've been, but I'm glad you're finally here. You know, this morning, I was convinced that I didn't belong here. I was planning to leave, pack up my bags and go. The truth is, and I guess you could call this a warning... The truth is, I'm full of sin. I've got them all the sins, the whole gamut, beginning to end. In many ways, I'm a pretty unsavory character. But I also think that if you'll just have a little patience with me and a little understanding, I think I might be able to overcome them, or most of them anyway. And I'd like to ask you... All of you, each and every one of you, for your help. Maybe, just maybe, we can help each other. We can struggle together. We can put the past behind us and see just what can be done with the future. What do you say?
For a moment, a cartoon moment, my question hangs above the upturned faces of the congregation. It floats there, and just when I think it's going to go crashing down in flames, I hear a voice.
Hear, hear!
It's Annie. And then she starts clapping. And then everyone starts clapping and smiling and hooting and hollering until the whole church is shaking and cheering. And I just stand up there in the pulpit, grinning away like an idiot. After the service, I'm surrounded.
Reverend, that was wonderful. I'm so proud of you.
I can't get over it. Look at all these people.
Well, I guess we made 40.
I guess we did.
That was an excellent sermon, young man.
Thank you.
I'll be back next week, along with the rest of the town. I can't wait to see what happens.
Finally, I find my way to the church office.
Well, 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 if it isn't the caption.
Very funny.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, I guess you're staying in Dudley.
I guess I am. What about you?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. Look at these.
What are they?
They're deeds.
Deeds?
Land deeds.
Oh, my gosh.
Annie gave them to me.
There's dozens of them.
She said it was her way of getting the last laugh.
So, I guess you're staying, too.
Well, I hate to think of you being down here all alone. I mean, this is a dangerous place.
Good point.
Besides, I get the distinct impression that things are just getting interesting.
I know what you mean.
You do?
Absolutely. One thing's for sure. This is just the beginning.
That was Wrath, a final episode of The Seven Deadly Sins, created and written by Greg Nelson. In the cast, Richard Side was Reverend Kevin, Jillian Fargy was Michelle, Bridget O'Sullivan was Verna, Lee Taylor was Harold, Betty Phillips was Old Annie Dudley, William Samples was Archibald Dudley, Wendy Knoll played Dudley's wife Molly, Juno Rudell was the maid, Frank C. Turner was the weeping rancher, and John B. Lowe was the minister on the wax recording. Original music was composed by Brian Tate. The script editor was Dave Carley. The associate producer was Dagmar Kafunkan Nunn. The recording engineer was Chris Cutress. The Seven Deadly Sins was produced and directed in Vancouver by Kathleen Flaherty. The executive producer was me, James Roy. You can order The Seven Deadly Sins on CD. The cost is just $21 for one episode or $45 for the entire series of 7.5 hours. To order, you can phone 416-205-5966. You can also email us at radiodramaoncd@toronto.cbc.ca. Or you can send a check payable to CBC to Radio Drama on CD, Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W, 1E6.
You're tuned to CBC Radio 2, Classics and Beyond, in Ottawa at 103.3 FM.